I have not seen the actual bus, but I've seen one just like it. Today is the 111th birthday of Rosa Parks, and the specific bus that Rosa Parks actually rode in and didn't give up her seat in is in Michigan, and I was in Montgomery, Alabama, where the bus boycott took place, in the museum that is located at the bus stop where Rosa Parks was arrested on December 1st, 1955. I was on a trip that was put together by the UU Service Committee at the time called Freedom Summer, a Civil Rights Journey. There were two things I learned that I really kind of took away with me after that visit to the museum that I hadn't really known before that day. One was about how long the Montgomery bus boycott lasted. I can't think of a time like in school sitting there listening to a teacher telling me about the Montgomery bus boycott. I can't remember that happening. But I remember hearing about it, but in my imagination, it's, you know, goes on for a couple weeks. It's 381 days. 381 days walking and walking and organizing rides and holding regular meetings to restore and give energy to the spirit. 13 months of that. The race for justice is not a sprint. 381 days of shoe leather is a different story. The other thing I learned that day is that it was that the bus was the Cleveland Avenue bus, and I don't know that there's any big lesson there except that we notice our name when we see it, right? We like to be part of the story, I think, or we notice when we think we might be part of the story. Even if we're not a central character, it's kind of interesting to be in there someplace. It's taken me most of my adult life to unlearn the whitewashed version of the story of this country. And I am sure I'm still having to do some unlearning about that. And while there is some discomfort and stumbling in the process, there's also just the joy and the learning that's available in all those new stories. I kind of love learning new stories. The poet Muriel Rukeyser wrote once that the universe is made of stories, not atoms. And the Zen Buddhist teacher David Loy builds on that notion. He says, the world is made of our accounts of it because we never grasp the world as it is in itself apart from the stories about it. And the same is true of ourselves. Everything is stories. And there may be nothing so important as the stories we are able to tell and the stories we are able and willing to hear. The sociologist Hajar Yazdia, in a new book about how Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement is remembered, tells this story. In 2022, Ohio Congressman and Senate hopeful Josh Mandel shared an anti-critical race theory video that he filmed in Selma, Alabama, saying, quote, Martin Luther King marched right here, so skin color wouldn't matter. Sharing the video with followers on Twitter, he tagged and thanked the King Center for the inspiration. Bernice King, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's daughter and the CEO of the King Center, fired back. Regretfully, I do not believe that I or the King Center legitimately motivated you to film this ad, as it is in opposition to nonviolence and to much of what my father taught. I encourage you to study my father and nonviolence in full. Mandel retorted with an anecdote about Dr. King's attempt to purchase a firearm to protect himself, decontextualizing the story to claim Dr. King, quote, knew the importance of the Second Amendment when he tried to exercise his right to self-defense and was wrongly denied a gun permit by anti-gun racists. Mandel went on, study your history better, Bernice King. Here was a white congressman from Ohio telling Dr. King's daughter, the CEO of the center dedicated to his legacy, that she did not know her father's history. With grace, Bernice King offered up the original text of her father's book, where he tells that story, describing the incident and its full context. Mandel did not concede. His supporters were not deterred. What we think we know. Who we think we are. What and who we strive not to hear. It isn't just that the world and we are made of stories, it's that we are also really wedded to stories that we tell, the stories that we tell. We can get really kind of bound to them. There are stories that we bind ourselves to, and stories that in turn bind and blind and deafen us. Stories that deaden us because they assert themselves as the only story, the true story, the story whose truth is demonstrated in its ability to delete, erase, eliminate all other stories. The story that enlivens and humanizes is that there is more than one story. The story of justice is that there is more than one story. The social justice team hosted a discussion last Thursday evening based on a book called The Wall Between, What Jews and Palestinians Don't Want to Know About Each Other. Many of you have read the book. What I kept thinking as I was reading it was that this is about the stories we tell and the stories we are not willing or able to hear. The co-authors of the book, Raja Khoury and Jeffrey Wilkinson, one Jewish, the other Palestinian, describe Jews and Palestinians as, quote, irrevocably enmeshed in the two meta-narratives of the Holocaust and the Nakba. As long as the recalling of one is used to silence the other, no real progress can be made. The trauma that Jews and Palestinians carry tighten the grip that each party has on their story. And each story is understood to endanger and threaten the existence of the other and vice versa. The authors argue that there needs to be a shift out of this zero-sum mindset that requires one story to lose and go away in order for the other story to win. I need to add here that the authors note that simply understanding or feeling that each side carries pain and trauma and truth isn't enough. It isn't enough to say that each side has a story. We need to remember that they're not telling the same story. Each side does carry trauma, but each side's trauma and experience of trauma is different. The situation each are in is different. For example, people in this country and in much of the world know what the Holocaust is, but like B, the Nakba, not so much. I needed the Nakba defined for me. It's an Arabic word meaning the catastrophe, and it refers to the 1948 Palestine War, where the United Nations had drawn up boundaries to describe this layout, this new state of Israel, and there was violent mass displacement and dispossession of Palestinians of their homes, land, society, and more. And as this dispossession, displacement, and oppression of Palestinians continues to the present day, the Nakba always refers not just to that incident in 1948, but to the ongoing catastrophe. Let's look at the same kind of dynamic in a different situation. Three Black Buddhist teachers led a series of retreats dedicated to what they called radical dharma, the ways that Buddhist teachings help to recognize and address the reality of the presence of white supremacy culture in Buddhist communities in the U.S. They are Buddhist teachers, so one of the things they are teaching is that everyone white and black and more, suffers due to the impacts and effects of white supremacy culture. The teacher Yasmin Saidula responded to a comment from an attendee at the retreat who wanted to insist that all we need to do is recognize that we are all the same. That's the fundamental thing that we need to do. And Saidula said, "One of the things that happens in both Dharma communities and academic communities is this attempt to view the problem of suffering and of racial violence in a we all experience it kind of way. I think that's true, and systems impact different people differently. I'm impacted differently because of my gender and my race and my class and education, and my sister is impacted by race more than me. I don't know how to change that, but I do know I can stare at my sister and say, I see that you are impacted differently than me, and I'm going to stand with you in whatever way you need me to stand with you." In the Jewish-Palestinian context, this recognition that becomes especially vital is the recognition that acknowledgement of another's story doesn't mean erasing your own story. The Wall Between authors tell about the amazing musical project spearheaded by Palestinian intellectual Edward Said and Israeli conductor Daniel Barenboim that brings together young Palestinian and Jewish musicians to form the West Eastern Divan Orchestra. During a visit to Germany, the young musicians go on a tour of the Buchenwald concentration camp. In a documentary film about the project, Said is seen encouraging the Arab musicians to go on the tour and deeply engage with what they see. The authors of The Wall Between say, "What is so essential that Said is revealing here is that to engage with the other and the trauma of the other is not an equivocation or a diminishing of your own experience." Said was an extremely important and influential advocate for Palestinian rights and sovereignty, for which many pro-Israel groups have continuously excoriated him. We can and must do both, engage with the other's trauma and resist oppression and inequality. The story that enlivens and humanizes is the story that there is more than one story. The story of justice is that there is more than one story. This also makes me think of the hue and cry around the teaching of critical race theory. There is a story that we do have to give up if we acknowledge the oppression and suffering of black people, if we acknowledge in American history the evil of slavery and white supremacy culture and how those forces persist. If we allow for that, we can't hold on to a story that says America and who we are is all sweetness, goodness, and light. That is a story we have to give up. We can't hold on to that story because it's a story that claims to be the only one, the only true one, the only right one. The theologian Esau Macaulay asserts, "Black history then should be a challenge to our republic and its core narrative. Instead of quibbling with this detail or that, it must raise a fundamental question about the quality of life black people have been allowed to experience." And Macaulay continues, "So would this leave us with only a tale of woe? No, there is dark beauty to the American story. The beauty is not in our innocence. African American history requires the recasting of our central figures, where those on the sidelines are brought to the forefront. The enslaved must be allowed to unbend their backs and step into the light and claim the glory due to them. Washington and Lincoln must give way to Sojourner Truth and Frederick Douglass as American marvels." When we get locked into a story that wants to be the only story, we will miss out on the dark beauty and on American marvels. the wall between authors talk about how we get stuck in groupthink and ideologically confined stories. One of the most interesting things I think they do in the book is that they point out that we don't get free from groupthink in the way that we might assume we would. They say this: while one might reasonably conclude that the antithesis of groupthink is thinking for oneself, it isn't quite as straightforward as that. Groupthink, or tribal thinking, amalgamates our individual identities and experiences, thereby intensifying our confidence in the reliability of our conclusions. So the pathway from groupthink starts not by being more individualistic, but by widening one's group. Widening one's group means allowing for more stories. The continual striving and yearning and gratitude and joy and opening to more stories, that is part of the essence of what I believe it means to be Unitarian Universalist. Love is at the center of Unitarian Universalism. Love is our ground and guide, but it may be that the way love leads us to value pluralism that is really what sets Unitarian Universalism apart. Maybe that part of our UU story really first was planted and bloomed with that Unitarian religious revival movement, the Transcendentalists. Henry David Thoreau reveling in the value and insight he finds in reading the Bhagavad Gita. Margaret Fuller's drive to tell the story of women in America and revolutionaries in Europe. Walt Whitman's city teeming with yet more and more people in whom he finds yet more and more beauty. And that's the spirit that calls us to struggle as UUs for civil rights, for racial justice, for LGBTQ rights, and for the rights of the earth, because we also don't limit ourselves to listening to just the stories that are coming from the two-legged creatures. There may be nothing so important as the stories we are able and willing to open ourselves to and to hear. May we open our ears and eyes, our minds and hearts to the stories around us, the stories of compassion and learning, and the stories of opening up to more stories, new stories. May we allow ourselves some patience with the discomfort we feel in a new story, with the discomfort we feel in recognizing a new trauma. May we find joy and inspiration in the opening to still more stories, in the widening of the circle. May we always be eager to hear another story. May we listen and honor and learn. May that be so.